Hi, I'm Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hi, Bill.
Thanks for checking out this podcast, A Real Recovery. You can hear the show live Sundays at 5 p.m. This, as well as many other podcasts, are available to listen to while you take a walk or do whatever you want to do. The address is myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
It's Sunday afternoon, and welcome to Real Recovery, using that soothing voice that makes you want to turn the TV on. Welcome to the show. Bill Arnold here on this side of the studio. Across the way, George P. Fraser, and at the board, Alex W. Gentlemen, how are we?
Good. I like the voice, Bill.
Yeah, I was kind of using that soothing voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can pull that every once in a while. George, we have a great show tonight. We have Phil Tyler and his wife, Anna, in studio, so we mean business tonight.
The Phil Tyler's here.
The brand is here.
It is.
Yeah. You can.
What a great story.
It's a fantastic story. We're going to get to it soon, time permitting.
Yeah, we might not be able to get him on tonight.
We might not get him on because we've got things to talk about and subjects to cover. We're going to talk a little bit about step 10 tonight, and we're going to talk a little bit about various kinds of idolatry. Because if you think you don't have it, wrong. You do. Go ahead, George. Tell us about step 10.
If you think you don't have it, you're wrong. You do. Go ahead, George.
You have idolatry.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead, George.
Well, step 10, we do a step every week. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. One of the things we got being on the show is we had Dr. Glenn on, and he said, being wrong doesn't mean you're bad. It just means you're wrong. And you can confess it and change it. That's a big deal. A lot of times what we do, we come into recovery, we come into our Christianity, we might have a problem, drinking problem, a drug problem, whatever we have, and when that problem gets solved, we don't drink for a while or we don't use, we think we're good. And what happens is we develop some other addictions, or as we like to say, other idols, which are God's substitutes. And Bill, you shared something with me this week that I found very interesting along these lines. A lot of times we do switch allegiances, God substitutes, mm-hmm. trying to get something to fill us that isn't God. And what was that list? Can you share that
with
us?
Well, yeah, let me, before I jump to the list, and I want to say, first of all, George, step 10 has got to be the most painful of all. I mean, who wants to go around admitting they're wrong?
Well, I thought quitting drinking was painful, too.
Okay.
This one was pretty...
But in terms of just admitting guilt, that's got to come slow and painful for people.
Yeah, and we also, Bill, look at some things that God has done for us in this step. Maybe it's been a while since we've had a drink, and so it's not all wrong or negative. Some of it's a real praise.
Okay. Well, I was looking at this list today, which I found, and it was put together by Pastor Tim Keller, and he said, life only has meaning, or I only have worth if I have power and influence over others. That would be power idolatry. I am loved and respected. That'd be approval idolatry. I have this kind of pleasure experience, a particular quality of life. That's comfort idolatry.
I got that one.
You got that one for sure. I am able to get mastery over my life in the area of, fill in the blank, that would be control idolatry. You're a control freak, George.
Yeah, but I don't have that one. I'm not that good at it.
Seriously?
Well, no, I mean, my golf game. Come on, enough said.
Well, yeah, but you're not good at golf, so you have no control over that.
You didn't get mean about it.
I don't mean mean. I'm just being factual. All right, next one. People are dependent on me and need me. That's helping idolatry.
I don't have that one. You do.
No, you do not have that one.
You have that one.
I've got that one for sure. Someone is there to protect me and keep me safe. That's dependence idolatry. That's not you.
Nope, not you either.
No. I am completely free from obligations or responsibilities to take care of someone. That's independence idolatry. That you got that for sure.
I got that. You don't.
No, I do not have that. I am highly productive and getting a lot done. That's work idolatry.
Well, we don't have that one. Let's move on. What's the next one?
I'm embarrassed. I even
people
read that one in our
that?
Studio.
Why would somebody have that? I got to meet somebody like that. They could cover
a lot
for
of people
me.
Have a work idolatry.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I've read about those people. I have been recognized for my accomplishments and I'm excelling in my work. That's achievement idolatry.
You got it. I never
perhaps.
Do anything, so I don't have it.
Right. I have a certain level of wealth, financial freedom, and very nice possessions. That's materialism idolatry. I'm thinking about becoming a minimalist, George, after I get all the stuff I want.
I like that.
Just keep it real simple, real plain. All right, next one is, this one person is in my life and happy to be there, and or happy with me. That's individual person idolatry. It's like we just need to have someone like us and be liked and all that.
Move on to the next. Not you. We're doing okay.
My race and culture is ascendant and recognized as superior. That's racial cultural idolatry.
Nope.
Okay. A particular social grouping or professional grouping or other group lets me in. That's inner ring idolatry. You're not in any inner ring.
No, and I'm Irish, so I can't do the one before either. So we're on a roll here.
Right. My children and or my parents are happy and happy with me. That's family idolatry.
Moving along.
Mr. or Mrs. Wright is in love with me. Relationship idolatry. Keep it moving. I am hurting in a problem. Only then do I feel worthy of love or able to deal with guilt. That's suffering idolatry. And the next one is my political or social cause is making progress and ascending in influence or power. That's ideology idolatry.
No,
but I'm saying these are all very legitimate, aren't they?
Sure, and they can be good. You know, you become a workaholic because you're bringing home the bacon and you're doing a good job and you're providing jobs, and it can get lost. We can get the focus on us instead of God. I think that's the problem.
And the last one, George, is I have a particular kind of look or body image. That's image idolatry.
Okay, we're both dead on that one.
Well, I'm just saying there's a lot of idols that we might overlook, that if you're listening to the program and you think, well, I don't drink or I don't do drugs, maybe one of these has caught your attention. Maybe you're suffering from, a personal individual idolatry or a work idolatry, achievement idolatry. Who knows?
Well, I think where we get into trouble, Bill, on any of these is they become selfish or self-seeking rather than other people seeking and God seeking.
Uh-huh.
You know, look at me, I'm doing this. But there's safety in our rituals, too, that provide a little bit of comfort. And in getting away from a destructive, addictive behavior, this might be some progress. What do I mean by that? Well, maybe if you work out 3 or 4 days a week, you know, if you're a slacker, you know, a mm-hmm. real man works out 6 or 7,
mm-hmm.
That can become an idol for you where if you don't get that, you're not happy. And I got to say I'm guilty there. How about you?
Well, even things like when I volunteer on Friday nights at the Salvation Army, sometimes I think I don't trust my own sincerity. I go down there because I obviously want to serve. But there's a part of me that goes, I hope people, you know, catch wind that I'm doing this. A little pat on the back now and then wouldn't hurt.
Sure. A little affirmation.
A little affirmation wouldn't hurt, you know. So I don't trust my own sincerity. I really want to make sure I'm serving the Lord with what I do and hopefully not letting things affect me.
And maybe if you were on that page where we're taking the inventory, why am I doing what I'm doing? Maybe that's a good thing to do every week for us to mm-hmm. check back on what I did during the week, not what I said I was going to do, but what did I actually do? And why did I do it?
Mm-hmm.
And let's make some progress there. But going down and volunteering and sharing God's word at the Army is a good thing, but we can make it about us, can't we?
Always. You can make anything you do about us, about yourself.
Can we talk about me for a while now?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Help yourself.
But that's kind of what we do, and I know Phil's going to talk about himself.
Are we done talking about you?
No, I never
am. Go ahead.
Can you talk about me now for a
no,
while?
No, not my circus, not my monkey.
Whoa! The monkey's off my back, but the circus is still in town.
You got it.
Alex, how about you? Sorry, I didn't mean to.
He's doing Sudoku.
And I'm winning. Yeah,
I'm doing
it. Doing it.
Oh, good to have you on the program. I'll provide a lot.
All right, George, does that wrap up step 10 and all the things that surround it? I mean, well, I tried to open up this idolatry package, and there's a lot of things. There's 20 things here I listed, and I have a feeling a lot of listeners can say they can check many boxes. So if that's the case, your heart does want what it wants when it wants it.
One of the reasons this is important, and we can back up a little bit, is we believe addiction is idolatry, and recovery without Jesus Christ is still idolatry. And what do we mean? We've got a false god in there. It's us. It's pleasure. It's me, me, me. Let's serve ourselves. And what recovery does, whether we work step 3 or not, where we turn our will and our life over the care of God as we understand him, this is not about giving God our drinking and drug problem. This is about if he's going to save me from my problem, he's going to be Lord over all areas of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the idols come in. And we need to do self-checks. You know, this is a spiritual journey. We're not perfect. And we need to go, hey, I need to work on this. My job's too important to me, or that person's too important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that you don't think you can do without, that could be an idol for you.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Well, George, I think...
Do we have a break coming up?
No, we don't. We don't.
Oh, okay.
Well, we do in about a minute.
Okay.
So we have a minute to talk about our guest before we bring him on, before we go to break. Phil has got quite a story to tell tonight. And we, George, like to refer on occasion to Philippians 3:10. And I will read it because I have the Bible right here. It says, where am I, George? I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of suffering, of sharing in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death.
Okay. And that's what we do.
That's what we do.
We put ourselves to death when we turn our will over to him. We've got to pick up our cross and deny ourselves daily.
Right. And if you want to hear a resurrection story,
stay tuned.
Stay tuned for Phil. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, more soothing voices, more real recovery. Thanks for being with us tonight. Beautiful Sunday evening in the Upper Midwest. If you live in Minnesota, in the Twin Cities, we have the Twin Cities Marathon today. And I think the most important thing you can do before you start a marathon is go to the starting line and talk yourself out of it.
Beautiful. Have you been outside today? It's freezing.
If you're going to run, it's a great day to run.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think they had 26,000 runners.
That's a great event.
Yeah. I mean, if you're like... The nice thing about a marathon is if you run one, nobody ever says to you, "Would you win?" Of course I didn't win. You know, usually the guy from Kenya who's barefoot, he usually wins. But if you say I ran a marathon, nobody says, "Well, did you win?" That's what's nice about a marathon. It's an individual, personal challenge.
The guy from Kenya.
That's usually what happens.
Same guy wins them all, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's barefoot. You know, does it in record time. Anyway, let's get back on track. We've got Phil Tyler in studio tonight, George, and you met Phil before I did, so why don't you introduce him?
Welcome to the show, Phil. It's good to have you. I'm still back on the guy from Kenya. Phil is the son I never had, really is.
Nice.
I love Phil, and I met Phil when I was program director at the Salvation Army. He came in and was volunteering. He's just a cool guy. What I noticed about Phil right away is he's dynamic, and there were a lot of tough guys at the Army. Bill, you get on there every week. And Phil was regarded as the top of the heap in that department.
Yes, he was.
Phil is the guy you don't mess with. Phil's
nope.
The leader.
Instant respect.
Yep. And that's why I hired him, because his main job was to keep me from getting hurt, which he told me. True story. He said, you don't have to worry about that at all. And what I didn't realize about Phil when I first met him is how smart he was. He's a brilliant guy, and he's got it all. God has given you great gifts, and most importantly, you're just truly a man of God, and you're a kind man. And I love you to death. You knew that.
George,
and
when I first met you, you told me you were normal, so you're obviously exaggerating something.
Well, I was overlooking on my part, but Phil's the real deal. And Phil, you've been on the program before, but you're coming back. You're married now. Things of God has added to your life. But I want to go back to kind of the beginning. We can go through the first years pretty quick, Bill, about where you were raised and then when you started using. So welcome to the program.
Glad to be here. Grew up in Louisiana, the Bayou. And,
nice.
You know, I didn't use much down there. I might have tried smoking cigarettes and stuff like that, but... It wasn't until I was 15 years old, moved to Minnesota and moved to Hastings and, you know, got introduced to marijuana. And pretty much used that to get accepted among the peers because I had an accent, got made fun of, that kind of thing, you know, the acceptance piece. And, you know, from there it wasn't constant, but the progression started to slowly develop in my life. By the time I was in 10th grade, I had to smoke marijuana every day.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I didn't want to go to school. If I wasn't high, I didn't want to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't go to school.
And did you grow up did you have a mainline denomination that you grew up with? Were you churched at all? Or were you unchurched?
I was...
You're 15 in high school smoking dope every day. What kind of background did you have spiritually?
I didn't really have much of a spiritual background.
Okay.
My dad, he would date. He he was divorced, and my mom, she didn't go to church. And when I lived with my dad, the women he was involved in would go to church. So I was saved when I was 14 years old at Awana camp in Louisiana.
Wow.
Yep. And my grandmother has said rosaries for me every night since I've been gone. And I take a lot of her prayers to my being here today for God pulling me out of the pit that I was in.
So you had a relationship with God, but there was something, you know, God was in audio and smoking dope was in video. That
exactly
took precedence. That was more interesting. And you're off to the races at 15.
Yep, off to the races at 15. Pushed God away. Didn't really think about him at all. Was caught up in, you know, doing drugs and partying and being around people, my friends. And 18 years old, when I was 18 years old, my dad told me he was moving back to Louisiana. And I told him, I'm a man now, and I'm going to stay up here because I'm a man.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a job, and I got all this stuff going for me. And he looked at me, and these were very honest words that he said. He said, boy, you're going to end up in jail. And at first, I didn't like what he said, but how many times did I hear that voice every time I ended up in jail?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he loved me, and he wanted the best for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I went to jail. All this pointing.
You know, that dad stuff, you know, you hate it when you say it. And you're going to get a chance to say that in the future. But that kind of stays there, doesn't it? And you know you can come back. It's kind of like the early church when we hear things, you know, about Jesus loves us. This I know, the Bible tells me so. When you get in real trouble, you remember that kind of stuff, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
And was dad right? Did you
wind
up?
Dad was right. And I ended up going to jail numerous times.
What kind of stuff were you doing?
I was drinking, stealing cars, selling drugs.
What age did you put down the Mountain Dew and say, all right, this is a job for alcohol?
That was at 17 years
17.
Old.
So you started marijuana before drinking.
Yep.
Now you're mixing the two. And then how long before you started something a little bit more serious than that? Not that those aren't serious.
18 years old is when I used my first powdered substance, controlled substance, cocaine and methamphetamine and LSD. I was doing that when I was 17, too.
You're open to trying anything, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I did it all.
Okay.
Any weapons, Phil? Were you one of those guys? You had a little gun?
Not much. I've had...
Got fists, George.
I know.
Those are weapons.
I had a gun back in 2008, my last rip on methamphetamine, I did have a gun.
Okay, so you're stealing cars, selling, making money. Are you selling any drugs at this point?
Yes.
Okay. Now, are you on your own or are you in a gang?
On the streets?
Yeah.
No, I'm on my own.
Okay. How was that? Pretty exciting lifestyle for you?
Because
it is a lifestyle, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not. It was exciting, but there was a lot of stress involved in it.
Okay. What's the stress?
Who's going to rob you?
Well, it's an illegal activity, George. There's always going to be the stress of
the
who
cops,
you sell to.
Yep. Are the cops going to pull me over and take me to prison tonight?
Right.
You know, things like that. Always lying.
Is there a piece of that, though, that's kind of part of being an adrenaline junkie?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that the game's on, isn't it?
Yep.
And we found excitement. We were looking for it. We found it. What were your friends like at the time?
I didn't have any friends.
Can't trust anybody?
What were the friends like that you got rid of? Were they good guys or were they other users? I mean, you obviously at one point maybe had some friends and then dumped them? Then it was just down to you?
It was pretty much users.
Okay.
And then when, you know, some people didn't go off the deep end and I did.
Okay.
And the guys that didn't go off the deep end with me, I didn't have them around me. I wanted to surround myself with people that used like me, that drank like me, that would, you know, that I could feel comfortable around.
Mm-hmm. So you're completely out of control at this point.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay. And then when was the first opportunity you had to be in front of a judge where you were going to be maybe going away for a little while? Because jail and prison are two different things. You've been to prison?
Yes.
More than once?
Yes.
How many times?
Three times.
What's wrong, George?
Bill Arnold for the prosecution. You don't have to answer these. He doesn't.
Yes, he does.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't have to answer these.
Quit representing him, George.
Okay.
I'll take over.
I'll stand down. But
stand down.
Thanks, George.
Exactly, exactly. So the first time you went to prison, how long was it for?
19 months when I was 19 years old.
Well, and it's got a ring to it, doesn't it?
Yep.
19 at 19.
And I,
you must have been. Were you scared?
I was scared. I was nervous. And then, I promised myself I wouldn't go back while I was in there.
How long did that last once you got out?
Well, I got out, and a buddy of mine had some people over, told me not to go over there because they were smoking methamphetamine, and I told them that I'm all right. I don't need to smoke it. So I went there, and, you know, they were doing that, and I drank a few beers, and next thing you know, I'm smoking the methamphetamine on the run. Must have been 2 months after I was out. I was already on the run.
And you're obviously on probation at this point as well, and you're at any point have to get tested for a UA, right?
Yep.
So you're in a high stakes game right now, aren't you?
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Definitely.
What was that like?
I didn't like it. I lied to myself though. I told myself that I was too smart to get caught with the drugs that I had, and when they got me, prison wasn't that bad, and that's the delusion that I fed myself to keep going and keep going and keep going, so I didn't get all depressed about where, you know, I was at 20 years old on my way back to prison for the second time.
At 20?
Yep.
Wow.
So this isn't going to change in your mind. This is your normal life.
Well, I didn't accept that until the third time I went to prison. Now, the third time I went to prison is when I said, you know, I guess this is just the way it's going to be for me. I'm going to be in and out of prison, so I might as well hook up with some guys in here, get comfortable, you know.
This is the routine.
How long was the sentence this time?
My third time in, I had a 51-month sentence.
Yikes. I can't even do the math there, George. How many years is that?
It's a little over four, Bill.
Okay. And how much of that did you have to serve?
I hope that was right, because what a moron would miss that. Yeah.
I ended up serving, I was supposed to serve 34 months. I ended up serving 36.
Wow.
What do you do all day?
Oh, all kinds of stuff, George.
Well, it's not camp. I mean,
make wallets?
I mean, huh?
What do? You make wallets?
Well, you work in the Minnesota Department of Corrections. They want you to have a job, otherwise you're locked into your room all day. And
okay, so job within facility. Yeah,
making 50 cents or a quarter an hour.
Okay. Not bad, is it, George?
But me, I got involved in other things and, you know, started brewing my own alcohol, getting
in
a hold
prison.
Of drugs. Oh, yeah.
In prison. So there's drugs and alcohol that you're using in prison.
Yep.
This is what confuses me, George.
Well, I could see where, you know, you got a bunch of guys who break the law and they don't have anything to do. They would try to do anything they could to escape, right? I mean, the boredom. And you can't break out, really, nowadays, so you figure out ways to do drugs.
Yep.
I was kind of in jail, actually, so I get that. But, yeah. So you're not really following a set routine. You're still pretty rebellious doing your own deal, huh?
Exactly. First 15 days I was in the Minnesota Department of Corrections on my third prison sentence, I had committed another felony while inside and was in segregation.
Okay.
And that was, you know, one of the many on that 51-month sentence, you know, one of the many times I went to segregation where I had to be segregated from the population because of my behavior.
Okay. Well, now, what would a felony, what can you tell?
Yeah, I'll tell you.
What you did?
I
hit somebody or
had
something?
I had some marijuana.
Okay.
More drugs and alcohol.
Okay.
So story of all my troubles in life.
Okay. So more drugs and alcohol while in prison. There you go, George.
Yep.
All right. I think we should take a little break. When we come back, we're going to hear about the amazing transformation of what Christ has done in Phil's life.
You bet.
Talk to his wife and hear all the good news yet to come. You're listening to Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us tonight. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a minute. This is Faith Radio. George, back to the soothing voices. You're listening to Real Recovery.
I love that song.
Oh, I love it, too.
Yeah, I really do.
George, Phil Tyler, excuse me, but, you know, he is committing a felony while in prison. This is like Lex Luthor.
He got caught committing a felony while in prison. You know, we're not going to ask if that was the only one he got caught for, but it is interesting, and you get segregated then. You find that you're by yourself.
180 days alone.
Yep. Woke up one day not planning to drink, and ended up drinking too much, like I do.
In prison.
Well, they have bars. You got a liquor store in there.
No. We don't want to get into all
that. Okay. But you can get it.
You can get it.
Okay.
We made our own. And
a little danger there. Maybe you go blind or have a little poisoning, but it's worth the risk, right?
No. Yeah, it is.
Okay. So what happened?
Well, I was drinking and snorting pills, you know, that guys had. And I don't remember much, but guys told me that I got into a fight, and it was a pretty big one. And a couple of my friends were in it, too. And we all went to segregation, which we call the hole. In prison, we call it the hole. And I woke up in there, and I didn't know how I got there. And, you know, the feelings of that, the, you know, if anyone's ever experienced a blackout before, to not know how something happened and you don't know what happened. There's lots of different feelings that I can't even, you know, there's a lot of anxiety. I couldn't sleep. I didn't know what was going on until they sent me the discipline charges and told me what I had been charged with. That's when I hit my knees, and I cried out to God at that point. And
what did you say to him?
I said, I pretty much in a cry, a literal cry, I told him, you got to help me. I know what I'm doing. I know this is wrong. I know this. And you got to help me, man. I can't do it. I can't do this anymore. And it was painful. And I wasn't sober from that day forward, but God's hand started playing a role in my life from that day forward, and I can see that today.
What happened?
I got let out of segregation 60 days early. I went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in the prison, not to go to AA, just to see some people. And I went going there. The guy from treatment remembered me, got me into treatment into Stillwater or into the prison system there, and didn't go to treatment to change my life, though. That wasn't on my mind at the time. I didn't want him to take my good time, because if I would have refused it, I would have got good time took. And back there is when the Lord spoke to my heart and told me that everything I had been doing in prison is securing a spot for me to come back to this place that I don't like, that I never really liked going to. And to me, that was distorted. And I made the decision right there to do whatever them people told me to do in treatment, because they obviously know better than I do on how to stay out of here.
What a change, Bill. Here's a guy, he's not listening to anybody, and now I'm listening, and I'm going to be obedient.
Yep.
Was that hard?
George, I will say you can cut and paste these emotions into any story for anyone listening. You don't have to be necessarily in prison for the third time. This is a guy who's in tears crying out to God, help me. And maybe your story is you're a successful guy with making a nice living, but you're trapped in some form of idolatry, addiction, and you need to make that cry tonight yourself. You don't have to hear Phil's story about being in prison. You can hear Phil's story of crying out to God saying, help me.
Amen.
And isn't it amazing? God does exactly just that. Starts helping Phil.
So what happened next?
Well, I started to work their program in there. And guys started coming in from 12-step groups and started sharing their stories of hope and encouragement. Guys came in from Christian halfway houses, and Teen Challenge Choir came in. And the Lord put it on my heart, you know, you need something more. You need something more than just this. And I had just did 3 years in prison, and it would have been 8 months in treatment. So And I just became willing and to listen to my heart instead of my head, because my head was telling me, don't tell nobody about that. Just get out, go back to, you know, the same spot. You'll be able to make it. And I denied my head, and I went and talked to my counselor, and she got me involved in a halfway Christian halfway house called Midwest Challenge Life Rebuilders. And I paroled there and got out of my old neighborhood and, you know, the town where everybody knew me. And I started new, and I submitted to their program too. Whatever they asked me to do, whatever was required of that program, I did it, because I felt that that was God's will in my life, where I was, where I needed to be. I didn't worry about food. I didn't worry about my bills. I didn't have that. I had a nice cushion to get released to after being incarcerated for 3 years, and they encouraged me to get in school. I started school. I transitioned out of there, started working for the Salvation Army due to doing volunteer work at that program, and got my license back. Worked and got my license back.
Big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, I never had it in my whole life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was 28 years old before I got it, but I got it, and I didn't get it on my time. I got it on God's time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't get out of incarceration and was like, you know what? I need all these things right now, because I didn't. I just knew that God had a plan.
When I first met you, things were going in the right direction, and things really picked up on the pace of going in the right direction. You had been real patient and waiting on God's time instead of yours, and it accelerated for you, didn't it?
Yeah, it definitely did.
What other changes happened for you? Because I remember this. This was just fun to watch, Bill.
I started seeing who is now my wife. We ended up getting married.
The woman sitting to your left right now?
It sure is.
Yeah. That would be nice if it was. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, good. I'm relieved.
Yes.
And, you know, we bought a house together. I switched careers, and, you know, just life is good, and we're expecting our first child in April, and God has blessed us beyond belief due to
surrender.
I don't deserve
His authority, right?
To be honest with you, I know I don't
none
deserve
of us
it.
Do. Absolutely none of us do.
Yeah, there's been a lot of blessings for all of us in here. And you started working with guys right away when I first met you. You were an example, and you were going to study groups and putting on Bible study groups and working with guys. And you worked with some of your friends doing that. But not everybody makes it, do they?
No, they don't.
And I think of one friend of yours who was a really good guy that we all liked a lot, who wound up working for us down there, and he died this last year.
Yep.
And, you know, I hope he died sober. I know he died saved, though. And that's the one thing, Bill, it's a big deal. We might lose our sobriety, but we can't lose our salvation. And things aren't going to always work out well. I know that, you know, we hear your story, and gosh, it's great, and you met the girl, and you got the job, and you got your license, and we got everything back. It's a lot of work. It's two steps forward, maybe one and a half back. But your expectation level wasn't on your terms. It was on God's terms. How were you able to do that?
I mean, kind of. You know, sitting in prison for 3 years kind of humbles a guy.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like I realized the fact, you know, that when I, you know, things weren't going to happen for me on my time. I couldn't get I'm not going to be able to get all the things that I want to get as soon as I get out. This is going to take time. And I set goals, and I set little objectives in order to attain them goals. Because in the halfway house I was in, the administrator who taught classes, she taught a daily living class. And her big thing was set goals. And how are you going to attain them goals? Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. And that's been working pretty good for me.
I think so. Bill, we never want to give up. And what Phil talked about is he didn't get sober right away in prison. There were a few infractions. How far down do I need to go? Hey, God, help me. I don't want to go any farther. And then we got to turn over the control. You talked about the control idol at the beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
We still have to do the work. Faith without works is dead, but we got to let the outcome up to God. And one of the things when we hear stories about this is God does have a plan for us. And Phil, I hope you're working with guys today. Are you still going back to the Salvation Army, and are you going to Midwest Restoration? Is that it instead of Midwest Challenge? Did I nail that one?
Restoration Hardware, George.
Okay.
Midwest Challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Life
okay.
Rebuilders is the new name.
Life Rebuilders. Okay.
I mixed that up.
I haven't been to Life Rebuilders much, but I do go to the Salvation Army every Tuesday night.
And you started a new place, what, last week going to?
Oh, yeah. I just last week I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to go back into Stillwater.
This is the prison you were in?
The prison I was in, the treatment I was in, and I got to tell my story, my testimony to the guys that were in that treatment.
See some familiar faces?
Of course.
Wow.
That's a big deal.
That's a huge deal. You went back into the facility that you were in segregation at one point, and you spent years there, and you were using in there, fighting in there, and now you're going back as an ambassador for Christ.
Amen.
Wow. Talk about transformation, George.
That is special.
It really is.
You got to listen to it to really appreciate it, don't you? It's too big.
It's too big. This has got to sink in a little bit. I mean, you're off to the races at 14. By 18, you're a meth addict. Then it's into crime, prison, jail, and once or twice in prison, and you're not different yet. You're still in trouble.
It's not changing.
Not changing. And you try external things. You try as many external things as you can, but those things don't work. It has to come from the inside. Has to come, like it says in Romans 12:2, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will.
Yep. One of the things about Phil, Bill, to me, has been there was no bitterness or anger about what had happened. There was no blaming since I've known Phil. Never.
Mm-hmm.
And there was only gratitude and acceptance. And that always helped me. That was a tough place to work at the Salvation Army. And you shared that with guys because you'd walk the walk that they had and had the same setbacks. And you were never bitter. You know, I never heard you say anything about this should have been different or that. You just moved forward, pressed on towards the goal.
Mm-hmm. That's a huge testimony because there's so much bitterness and resentment.
Yeah.
Yeah. George, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to have another segment with Phil. Talk to his wife, Anna, a little bit. So stay with us. There's more to come. Road Recovery. Don't go anywhere, okay? Promise me. Thanks. Hello, everyone. Thanks for being with us tonight. I hope you're enjoying tonight's encore presentation with Phil Tyler. This is another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. We're so glad you are here.
It's live, though.
It is live.
It's not encore because we've had him on before.
No,
well. It's an encore.
That's what I meant, encore. He's been here before. He's come back for an encore. Yeah.
Because we tape a lot of shows. Never.
Never. Nah, never, never. But anyway, George, you had a question for Phil? I think you did.
I did on the last segment. I always wondered, you know, Phil, why you were able to not get so bitter, and how did you do that? And then I'd like to transition into how you met your wife.
How did I get not so bitter about my situation?
What was in your head that kept you from being bitter and resentful? Because you always had that calm, everything's going to work out, and that kind of attitude was really powerful to the other guys. It was powerful to me. Because, you know, I generally want to...
It's a contrast to you, actually.
You know?
You want to battle right now. I can see it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take a swing right now, George, if I could.
Bulletproof glass, Billy. Good luck.
You paid for that. Studio didn't. That's for your own protection.
How'd you do it,
Phil? Yeah, how'd you do it?
How'd you keep that?
God's word? Did you just get it in your bones?
A lot of reading the Bible and, you know, believing that God had a plan. I had a counselor in prison tell me once when something didn't go my way and I was real fearful about getting out, she looked me in the eye And she said, God has a plan for you. And that has stuck with me, and I believe that God is, you know, in control of everything. So, I mean, but not getting bitter, I just, you know, I like to practice the 12 steps in everything I do. And, you know, if something arises, I work through it. I figure out where it came from and why it came. And, you know, I try to do that to the best of my ability, even with my wife, who I met through sponsoring one of my friends, and seeing her at his daughter's, I believe, first birthday party. And we, I started messenger on Facebook and talking, and he was okay with me taking her out on a date.
So
he kind of set it up.
Oh, so. No, well, let's back up here. Let's back up. So you got a, did you get a friend request first from him?
Nope, just a message on Facebook.
So he's flirting with you?
Kind of.
No,
I
no,
think.
Not kind of. He was, for sure. And, you know, it's funny, Anna, because I've only known Phil clean and sober, and I think you've only known him clean and sober.
Yep.
And I can't imagine this man on drugs. I can't, because the transformation of Christ in his life makes him a completely different person. And I can't, I don't know, I just can't, I don't see it.
It's hard for me to picture it, too. People tell me all the time, like, his background and what he's done, and I try to sit back and close my eyes and picture him doing these things, and it's still very hard for me to picture him doing it.
That's new creation in Christ.
Well, yeah, and I don't mean to go negative here. I can see you doing it because I did it myself. What I would say is Phil is a big-time player, and whatever he does, Bill, he's going to be in it all the way. There's not a lot of half measure here.
Mm-hmm.
And God gave you a lot of talent. That's real obvious. You're a very dynamic guy, and you influence people. And we can influence people for the good or the bad. And guys respected you from before because you were king of the hill as being a bad guy, and when they meet you now and see Jesus all over you, they got to pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big-time deal, Bill. And I like the messenger deal and how that worked out. One of the thrills for me, and you get this, it's about community, Anna, and Bill knows that too, that you get to see what God's doing in people's lives. And for me, I love Phil when I worked with him, and to get to go and see your wedding, that was a big-time deal. That spoke loudly to a lot of people that were there of fulfilled dreams and the hope and redemption that can only come in Jesus Christ. It was a big deal. A little hot in there that day, but
kind of.
It was a beautiful church. And any other news you got over there, Phil? I mean, job-wise or anything?
Well, I mean, I kind of wanted to...
Apparently not, huh?
Not job-wise. I mean, I work as a carpenter now.
Yep.
So there's plenty of work, George.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's plenty of work.
Lots of work.
Jesus did that, you know, Bill.
He did?
Yeah, carpenter.
Yeah, I guess I do remember that.
Yeah.
Local 322, Carpenters Union.
Is that the union he was in? Local 322?
I believe so.
Yeah, union, see, union guy? All the way. All the way. Now, do you have any kids, Phil?
I don't have any kids.
Okay.
But we are expecting our first child together in April.
Wow.
That's very exciting.
God's will for it.
That's very exciting. So, Phil, I am thrilled that what lies ahead for you as a husband and a father is the influence you will continue to have in the life of your family and in the life of the people out there that desperately need to hear the life-changing message of the gospel.
Amen.
Yeah, so, George, I tell you, Phil's got quite a story.
Well, and the neat thing is we got to see a lot of it. We didn't see the before, but we really got to see the after. And the reason we wanted to have you back on is not only because you're such a great guy and you got a great story, the story continues to get better. And the reason that is you're working with guys. You're down there, and you're going down to the Salvation Army every week, and you're studying some steps down there with the boys?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But you get interaction with the guys, and they get to see people that are actually doing the deal. You're modeling what a successful Christian guy looks like for them.
Yep.
So, George, we talked about step 10 tonight, which is when you discover you're wrong, you quickly admit it, right?
Right.
Anna, how's he doing with that?
Be honest.
He does a good job, actually. He's very good at it.
How does he do with that?
It might take some time for him to admit it.
I'd hit him harder than that, Phil. Just go in. Nail him.
No, he does really good, actually. He's actually, I think, probably, if we do ever fight, he's the first one to say sorry.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And the conflict is the part of the road to the greater intimacy, right? You got to have conflict that you work through, and so you're not afraid of that. And
Bill Arnold, family instigator.
Would you back off?
What we see all the time is that people who get it want to give it away. And if you're listening tonight and you're thinking about your recovery, if you really do have a walk with Christ and a strong recovery, you're going to want to share that. And if you don't want to share it, maybe you need to up your game a little bit and look at all the things you need to be grateful for. Because, Phil, I'll tell you, the greatest thing in the world in recovery and Christianity is seeing God work in other people's lives. And if you can be a part of that, and the best way to be a part of it is to share that, nothing better, is there?
No.
Thanks, Phil.
Nothing better.
I did all that work for a no, Phil. Yeah.
George, I'm very aware of that.
Got the family instigator and the one word guy here. Alex, hop in here anytime.
I'm still playing Sudoku, so I'm busy.
George, let me read Philippians 4:11 because
read the whole book if you want to.
Let me start in Exodus. Moses said, in Philippians 4:11, because this seems to fit Phil to a T, which is, I'm not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. And I see a man who has really traveled through a lot of circumstances. And I got to tell you, if you're feeling troubled by your circumstances tonight and you're driving in the car or you're sitting at your house listening to all this and you think, oh, my gosh, I can't relate to this guy. He went to prison 3 times. It's not me. But I promise you, the sense of brokenness or the sense of needing something in your life to change, you start with God. You start with asking God to help. You cry out for help, just the way Phil did.
Yeah, your life is not going to be good enough with God because we were designed to be fulfilled by God. If your life hasn't been good enough so far, you might want to look at that. We're designed to be filled up with Jesus. If we don't have Jesus, it's never going to be good enough. You're always going to keep going, well, you know, if I had that car, that job, that person in my life, that much money, then I'd be happy. And then you get it. And it's not good enough. And the reason is it's not supposed to be. And Bill talked about at the beginning of the show, the idols, the God substitutes. Here's a guy, Phil, who was looking to get community, drugs, action, money, power, prestige, tough guy, and it didn't work. He reaches out to God, and God's taking his time, but changing everything in his life. And it is good enough. You can't fake the happiness that he has, Bill. That's what this is about.
Yeah, and it was a hard road to get where he got.
You bet.
But God worked and is working in his life, in his time, on his schedule, using his pacing. And Phil is going to just be involved in the process and let God determine the outcome. And it sounds like staying in the Word, staying in community, working hard, all that stuff is...
You and I were doing good till the last one.
I agree. But, it's all important pieces of the puzzle for a nice, strong recovery. Last week, we talked about replacement.
Yes.
We talked about removing something and then replacing it with something. And you can take out a behavior, but if you don't replace it with something, that old behavior can sneak back in pretty quickly.
Well, there's balance here, too. There's the full life. Working with guys. I know Phil goes to church. They went to church today. He's in a study. He's got a good relationship, and he's giving it away. And that's how you keep it. You got to give it away to keep it. But you can't give away what you don't have.
Yeah. So, Phil, I got to say...
Throw a cliche in on top of that one, big guy.
No, I heard the cliche. It was coming. I saw it coming from Cleveland, by the way. Oh, here comes a cliche. I see it coming.
You want another one?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well,
one
I got
more.
A couple more.
I'll
we have
more.
Time, you know. Let
Plenty
go
time.
And let God.
There you go. Where'd you learn that one?
Oh, I'm brainwashed.
Okay.
I'm brainwashed. Phil, it's been great having you guys on here.
I agree. No, I love the stories. The stories of transformation. And again, just because Phil went to prison and he's got that story, it's the story of his redemption, which is the one you can apply to your life. And maybe you need to just cry out to God tonight. Maybe tonight's the night. Maybe in the next 5 minutes you do so. You need to just, after the show ends, just cry out to God and say, I need your help. That's why we do the show, George.
We can do it before the show ends, too.
Well,
I've been doing it for the last hour.
So that wraps up another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. We're so glad you joined us tonight. Next week, we have Dr. Glenn Pickering back with us in studio. I hope he's going to be in studio. And we're going to talk about forgiveness and how difficult it is sometimes to forgive someone who has wounded. And we're going to try to find out what he has to know about that, and it's a lot. So stay focused, be strong, have courage, have a great week. Thanks for listening. Good night, everybody. Hi, I'm Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hi, Bill.
Thanks for checking out this podcast of Real Recovery. You can hear the show live Sundays at 5 p.m. This, as well as many other podcasts, are available to listen to while you take a walk or do whatever you want to do. The address is myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.